This is the Agile Thoughts Podcast, and I'm Lance Kine.
Hi there, this is Arvind Rathore. Exciting to be here at the Agile Thoughts Podcast. Thank you, Lance. I'm based out of Bangalore, India. I'm a keen agilist. Been in the industry for 24 years and worked with all over Fortune 500 different large companies and now startup, and keen to understand how the agile world has evolved and share some of my thoughts.
This is a continuing episode about Agile in the C-Suite with Arvind Rathore. Now let's think about other upper management and leaders that are listening on the show. And can you express to them some symptoms that they may be experiencing due to non-agile leadership?
There are a variety of symptoms that you can sense if you were to talk to people, or for that matter, what shows up in your day-to-day dashboards and things that you are really taking a pulse of the organization, right? So I think if people in your organization are exactly doing what they were doing 2 years back, and their competency is exactly the same that it was, say, 2 years back, right, in this fast-changing world. And if you're keeping a track of how your people are either upskilling themselves or how you're enabling the upskilling part in your organization, I think that gives you a sense of, because your workforce is your greatest asset, right? So if they are not upskilling, then you've got a problem at hand. Then you do not have a workforce that can respond to change and hence is agile, right? So I think that is one measure. Often, I think in today's day and age, it's become a trend in some of the organizations, I won't say many, where the failures are celebrated, right? Hey, we failed, there's 9 projects that failed. This is, you find this seldom, but there are organizations that are putting front and center in their dashboards. Now, they're not showing everything green. They're not showing that, hey, everything is hunky-dory. They're saying that, we tried 40 projects this year, 9 of them failed, and 2 of them miserably, and so on and so forth, right? And then if you have an appetite of those kind of this thing, then you know that this organization is agile, and your leadership is an agile leadership, right? So what do you measure is really important. How many experimentations that you did? When are you measuring it? And then what's your score around experimentation, right? Now, because those are the muscles that you're building for responding to change within the organization, right? So I think if you don't see any of those things happening, then you can pretty much say that your style of leadership is not really in what we are calling as agile leadership.
Interesting. I like that. You're saying, in a way, let's say this, just finished a year and every project was completely successful. It's a little suspicious. It's like, well, are we trying very hard? Well, why is it everything so safe? Nobody's trying to push the limit. Interesting. Yeah.
Another concept that I'm a big fan of and I talk about and I write about is, I'm sure you're familiar with what, David Bland, I think, coined this term called organizational debt, right? Which is an extension of technical debt, right? So organizational debt, just for the listeners to level set, is really a debt that you are adding to the organization because of a series of bad decisions or a series of indecisions, right? So if you've got a huge organizational debt, and there's no tool really to measure it, but you can get a sense of what are the things that are getting added to your organizational debt. So if you, as a leader, have a insurmountable organizational debt, then it's obviously not an agile, your leadership style is not really that of an agile leader, right? So I think, we can talk more about if you'd like, because this is a wonderful concept of really measuring your leadership style in the way that how are you contributing to the organization debt? Are you taking decisions based on what is required short term, here and now, or are you really gearing up the organization for being agile in the long term?
Okay. Yeah, no, I'm not familiar with the organizational debt, but I thank you for mentioning that. I'll take a look at David Blaine's work in there.
Yeah.
But it makes sense too, is that any like code or like, you know, your kitchen, anywhere or your garage, anywhere can create, you can start piling up debt and it sits there and saps energy. Oh, cool. With the rise of remote work, how has agile leadership evolved to accommodate distributed teams? Are there unique challenges or opportunities that have emerged in this context?
Oh, yes. Oh, I mean, yes, definitely. I wrote an article, you know, when we were in the pandemic, all of a sudden the world went entirely remote, right? And you know, what happens to the agile teams? Right. Because in agile, we talk about a lot of these ceremonies, essentially face-to-face. Hmm. True believer that nothing can really replace the face-to-face interaction experience. So in that sense, I mean, with the rapid globalization, anyway, we were doing a lot of distributed teams, you know, team based out of different time zones, and how do the ceremonies, agile ceremonies change, or, you know, how do we sort of give a different flavor of these ceremonies to overlap and so on and so forth, right? So I think a lot has changed because of COVID and, you know, the work shifting, if not entirely remote, in a hybrid fashion, right? So I think that is something that the agile leaders need to take notice, and, you know, obviously not already. And how do you still keep teams agile in this era of distributed teams, right? So my advice always in that sense is, one, you know, even though you're remote, make a point for the teams to collaborate face-to-face at any opportunity that you get, right? Especially during the planning phase where, you know, if you're planning for a project, get people together under one roof, have them interact, because that really sets the tone of how the teams are formed and then how are they going to perform subsequently. Then I think the way they work is distributed also plays an important part, right? So I think what I always advocate for is reduce the number of hops that the work is going to have, right? So essentially, if for example, in the IT world, how the teams were, you know, distributed 10 years back was you'll have a development team in one time zone, and then the work gets shipped to another time zone where the testing is going to happen, and then, you know, probably the deployment team is in another third time zone, and so on and so forth, right?
Right.
Now, what I tell the teams is that have people who are responsible for a particular project, have them be on one location, right? So that means that divide your work in a fashion that if a developer responsible for the work and whoever is the person who's going to test that project and who's going to deploy it, all those three people, including the business analyst, if you will, in the context of an IT team, are in one location and are sitting together, right? Hmm. And their output of that project would be consumed by, let's say, another project too. That team could be, you know, in another location, right? Mm. So you see what I'm saying is that you still are distributed, but you're distributed in a different way, right? So the number of hops between a developer and a quality engineer and a release engineer is significantly reduced. And I think that's if you organize things that way, you'll be better off. In the near future, will never be in still a situation where we're still, you know, in the same room and every person in the organization is working under the same roof.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. We have to figure out what people mean when they say the words distributed, because there's a difference between distributed people, meaning people are scattered about, and distributed teams, meaning you have atomic teams that are in the same location or same enough that work with other teams that are in different locations. But the team itself is somehow, like you were talking about, the hops between the team members isn't very great, because otherwise they won't work efficiently together.
Yeah. And there are, you know, various other techniques, you know, and the technology is helping in that regard in terms of not only the way we, you know, video conference and see each other and so on and so forth, but also tools that are getting developed in the software development lifecycle. You know, the increased amount of automation, and, you know, I can see what Lance is doing, and Lance can see what I'm doing, you know, in terms of the work that we do, despite being in two different time zones and be in sync. So I think technology is helping. So I think the level of automation and the adoption of some of the tools in the SDLC, software development lifecycle, is going to improve things, even if the teams are distributed.
I'm going to put you a little bit on the spot here. Do you require teams to use their cameras when they meet? If they're working from home or working remotely?
Oh, yeah. I realized that in COVID, during the pandemic, it helps tremendously. By default, the practice that I've used in the past, ever since from the pandemic days, is essentially people show their faces. Even if it's 5 minutes, they will, switch off their cameras later. Feel free to do so, but we prefer that people are on video. Makes a huge amount of difference in the way people are interacting and, what comes about, and the quality of discussions really change, right? It's not mandatory, but definitely preferred.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, that's been kind of a, I don't know if it's a culture war isn't probably the right way to put it, but there are people in the industry who do not like to use video conferencing. I feel like, so this is my opinion, a form of discipline is if you're going to a team meeting, make all attempts to have your camera on. And I get it. If you've been on the camera for like the last 6 hours or whatever, you're like just tired of it and maybe you need to take a walk while you attend this meeting. Great. No problem with that. But if the team doesn't meet over camera, what I've found is nobody in the organization will meet over a camera because it's sort of a culture within the organization is that people are doing what I'll put it this in air quotes, calling it in. They're always just calling it in and they're never trying to put their best foot forward to communicate clearly and visually. In an organization where nobody shows up on camera, what I find is that also encourages high levels of multitasking while they're in meetings. And so they're not really in the meeting. They're doing other activities. And of course, people could still do that on camera, but I find it's harder because I myself, sometimes I'm on camera and sometimes this meeting doesn't have anything to do with me. And I will start doing a little bit of multitasking. But it is harder when you're on camera because people may ask you a question and you can't. I'm sure we've all been on the call where somebody got asked a question and they're a black box and then people just wait a few minutes and then everybody assumes, yeah, they're not really there and they move on.
Yeah.
Nobody says, I wonder if they're there. Everybody just sort of makes up the story in their head and then they just let it go.
Yeah. I've been in days. Now we're talking about video conference and, Zoom and Skype and so on and so forth. Right.
Yeah.
Imagine the scenario 10, 15 years back where everybody used to dial in from a phone or a phone in the conference room or their personal phone. You have no idea who's on the other side, what are they thinking and so on and so forth. Right. So now with the video, I think that makes a lot of sense on why people should switch on the video. But at the same time, I totally understand on why some people, as an exception, would not, right? Like you mentioned, on if they've been on video throughout the day. But more importantly, there are people, taking care of their household. This is, during pandemic days I'm talking about, right?
Sure.
And they're taking care of their children, and they may not be in the best presentable, form at that point in the time. So I think, I empathize that perspective. But I think what you're talking about is more of a corporate culture where none of participants does that, and then that becomes the culture of the organization, right? So that becomes more of a norm than an exception.
Right.
So I think that the meetings is another topic that we can go on for an entire day. Right? It's interesting because that really, takes away a lot of time within the corporate world and how meetings are run and how they should be and how they should not be. It's an important topic for probably another day.
Ace is an agile consultant who shares space with a coffee shop in order to save on the rent. Meet this hard-boiled agile consultant and follow his adventures on helping his clients become agile no matter the circumstance. Scrum Noir, the project management comic book that teaches you agile, is available on Amazon. Just search for Scrum Noir. N-O-I-R. Links to various articles written by Arvind. like the CIO article, can be found in the show notes. What are show notes? Show notes show up right in your podcast player for easy access. If you're not using a podcast player, just go back to the website where you downloaded the MP3, and there you'll see the show notes. The series started at episode 266. And if you're like my friend, Francie Van Workus, and you missed the first episode of the series, go back to agilethoughts.info, and there you'll see a search engine where you can type in whatever episode number you want, and it'll find it for you. Next episode, more Agile in the C-Suite with Arvind.
Everybody's talking about AI. I like it or not, but you know, people are in the agile world are trying to see how does that make sense for agilists, for corporates in general, and you know, some I feel there is a sense of force fitting something. You know, I've seen some of the coaches and some of the agile purists saying agile and AI, how do they get along, what are the different models, frameworks, so then, you know, I think getting ahead of themselves and trying to force fit things. But that's an interesting thing.